Let's do Duolingo. I've been doing that in Japanese for a while.
Oh, okay.
It's free. You
can I might have to learn Chinese first, given that I'm going there in 2 months.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, it'll take you a little while.
Yeah.
Welcome to GCP Bytes, episode number 18, for Friday, the 6th of June, 2025. GCP Bytes is a podcast where we discuss Google Cloud and tech, and I'm your host, Stephen Bancroft. On today's show, VO3 blows everyone away. Google beefs up its sovereign cloud. VMware Cloud finally has an update. Plus, a good AI stories. Find out in the AI wars. But before we get to any of that, I'd like to introduce the co-host of the show, Dave Wall. How are you, Dave?
I am great, mate. And nice to talk to you on a Friday for a chance.
Yeah, sorry, we had to push the recording back a little bit, but we're good. We'll get it out like we always do. And our very own GDE, Ian Brown.
How are you, mate?
Good, good.
He doesn't care how I am this morning.
he is here.
Yep.
That's all that matters. How are things up there in sunny Queensland?
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it's a little bit chilly.
You're actually wearing a vest.
Yeah. I'm wearing a vest, which is outrageous because I never wear jumpers ever. Like, you remember, we're out in Winton and it was like 2 degrees and I had a vest on.
Yeah, that's what it takes.
It's actually kind of funny, right? Because, like, looking at the three of us on this call, we've got you there, Ian, and, you know, you're in a vest, you're a little chilly. Banky, who's a little bit further south, looks a little colder. He's got a nice thick hoodie on. And then there's me down here in, you know, chilly Victoria, and I've got the hoodie and I've got my beanie and my big hobo beard.
And we know you're in the coldest room in the house. So.
Yeah. So we need a Tasmanian co-host.
You wouldn't get anything out of them, the teeth chattering.
It's just a whiteout screen. Yeah. It's just a big frost.
Yeah, it's we're getting ready for our Western trip. So, as you guys know, we're leaving on the 23rd of June.
Oh, yeah.
We're heading all the way out to Boulia, which is sort of halfway between Mount Isa and Birdsville. Right out west there. It's only about 300 kilometres, I think, from the new Northern Territory Queensland border. And then from there, we'll head south into Baturi and Birdsville and then come all the way back. So it's about 4,500 Ks all up.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, yeah. So we're
you live in a ridiculously large state.
Well, so that's only like the height that we're travelling in the state is only about maybe a fifth of it.
Yeah, that's only like the little bottom corner of it, really. Yeah,
and it's going to take us 4 days of driving to get fully to the border.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. We're hoping to get to Haddon's Corner, but everything is still in flood out in the Channel Country.
Yeah.
I was actually talking to a lady at Birdsville Hotel because we want to do the Lake Eyre flight, which is a half-day flight.
Well, now would be a good time to do it when you get the water there. Yeah.
Oh, it's full. So, and she said they did one the other day, and it is absolutely amazing. But it's $1,200 a seat, which is a lot of money. But it's 2.5 hours out there, so you fly over Lake Eyre or Catatandra, and then you stop at William Creek for some morning tea, some mornos, jump back in the plane and fly back to Birdsville.
Mm.
But yeah, it's a lot of driving to get out there.
Yeah, a mate of mine did it a few years ago. He's an amateur photographer, and when we went out to the big bash at Birdsville, he did the flight, and some of the shots he got were quite spectacular.
Oh yeah. Some of those shots that are coming out of there at the moment are phenomenal.
Mm.
But there's still a lot of roads out in that Diamantina that are closed, which, you know, that sucks, but. We're going to take.
Well, there's not a lot of roads.
No,
that's the problem.
Yeah, that's right. There's not a lot of roads.
As it closes, you're kind of trapped.
Thankfully, most of them are all paved these days. But but I remember the days where the development roads out there were all dirt. And you get big floods like have come down from northern Queensland earlier and no road left.
And that's it. Yep. Everyone's stuck.
And this will be like the first like really, really big trip with the new four-wheel drive and the new caravan?
It'll be the first trip with the new four-wheel drive and the new caravan. Like the trips that we've done previously with it have just been we're going down to the local camping spot and we're just
weekend away sort of stuff.
That's 20 k's away, 30 k's away. This is we're driving for 4 hours on our first day just to get to Billawheeler. And then we're staying in a caravan park because reasons.
Because when you get out further west, there ain't much.
No.
So you may as well.
The second day we're driving, I think we're driving for about 7.5 hours solid driving. So it's a little bit like Banky that day that we went from Atherton all the way to Winton.
Yeah.
That really big day that we had on the road. This is going to be the same. Our second day is going to be the same because we're going to Lara Wetlands, which is a spectacular spot. In the middle of nowhere, it's south of Bark Alden. But yeah, it's going to be.
Use that tone with me. Hey, sounds like you just swore on a podcast.
wait till we get some of the other names in the country. But yeah, so Lara Wetlands is gorgeous. It's this massive big lake in the middle of nowhere where there shouldn't be a lake.
But you won't, you're taking any reading material with you? You won't be taking any Linux format magazines with you?
I will not be taking a Linux format magazine with me.
No. Or you might take the last edition.
Yeah, well, I could do. sadly, Linux format is done. They've closed up shop after 25 years.
Yeah. Issue number 329.
Yep. Yeah, it's a really sad day. I remember when Linux Journal closed up shop. I've got all of them. I've got to download the latest version of Linux format before we go because, you know, I'm going to need reading material.
That's it.
But, yeah, it's a sad day when magazines like this shut up shop because I remember them. These are the sort of magazines that got me into Linux back in the 90s. Yeah.
The big disc pack, the five-disc pack, of Red Hat on the front, yes.
Yep. Yeah, I had the – and I'm pretty sure it was Linux format that I had that had Red Hat 5.2.
That's the one.
It was 5.2. Yeah, and it was a CD, which is one CD, and that was it. It was fantastic.
Yeah, and then they slowly got more and more elaborate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's takes me out. Not Linux format, but like I remember my dad always having like the PC user subscription. Yeah. Same thing, you know, going in, you get the disc every month and like, oh, what's on there? Is sort of little shareware games and demos and things to do.
Yeah.
Certainly was one of the things that helped get me into tech.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yep. Did you ever get PC Market magazine? It was basically the trading post for PC parts.
Got the green guide, and then the green guide said like, "Oh, there's the computer swap meet," and they've rotated around various town halls.
Yeah.
And it's funny because like I remember Dad, he bought. This is an extravagant purchase, and I remember we went to the swap meet, and he bought. Pentium 2, I want to say it's the 400 megahertz one or 200 megahertz. Yeah. It was whatever the top one was.
Of
the Pentium.
400,
And it was like $1,100. Oh. And it was like, this is the most amount of money.
speaking of, so the latest version of Linux format has an article on escaping Windows 10, right? Which is fantastic and ironic because KDE have just released the most brutal ad about Windows 10. It's all about how Windows is going to, you know, just kill you off and force you to spend money on a new PC because you can't upgrade to Windows 11 on this PC and you should move over to Linux because KDE is the best distro out there. And I was reading this article the other day about it and just went, that's pretty blunt. Like... Well, I've seen some blunt ads in my life, but that's pretty blunt.
There's only one thing they're saying in that ad, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, I'm on KDE now. I love KDE. It's great. Yeah. Did you guys see that video? You saw guys see that video I sent you during the week, Lord of the Stars?
Oh, man. These VO3 videos that are coming out,
they're insane.
Like, even in the first weekend after the release, has shocked me.
I was so confused. Yeah. That, there's not even a tell. Like, you can't even, that, you know, most AI videos have some sort of tell in there. You can see the fingers or something's not quite right. It's just, you can't.
I mean, like, the latter part of that video, the physics get a bit janky when, like, the X-Wings get involved and things. Yeah. Like, but the all the people interactions.
But yeah, that video we saw earlier that had a dude interviewing a whole heap of people.
Out on the street. Yeah.
That was completely AI generated. And you were like, what this is a YouTube reel. That's not a YouTube show.
I think with like the one that was on the street is because there's so much just vapid interview/prank content on YouTube. Yeah. Like, there's so much. Like, and all of these people, you know, you're mostly getting people who are interviewed who are like drunk. It's just like, well, you know, there's nothing highbrow coming out of any of this. And so, of course, an AI can easily rip it out because. Yeah. Yeah,
it truly is AI slop.
This is what we're training AI to do.
Pretty much.
Mimic drunk humans.
Yeah, but I mean, I saw a video that was a guy who is like a video director for pharmaceutical commercials. He says like, you know, normally he'll do an ad and it costs like $500,000. He's like, I spent $500 in credits, and he generates this one that's like a puppy. That's like a depression medication. It just attracts puppies to you. And that's And like, and then there was another one that was like a car show. It was a car show interview, and the quality that it's able to do of like, you know, giving the vibe of a car show. You see the cars behind, people are interviewed about the cars, the trade show kind of background, you know, people milling around, noises, and easy. And if you were just scrolling through your phone and you're not detailing, well, like if. Like, one of the people being interviewed is like wearing like a Hell's Angels jacket, and some of the text is a bit weird, but you have to stop and look for it. If you're just scrolling.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is
it's on a small screen. You're not going to, what's VO4 going to be like,
right? I was going to say, you've got to think about how far this has come since, I know, Dave, you sent this little clip around last time. I think it was like a Will Smith type.
Yeah, the Will Smith spaghetti noodles. Video spaghetti from 2 years
it's
ago.
Like there's hands going everywhere.
Someone has redone in VO3, and my God.
Yeah, but this is the thing. You look at where we've come from that edition in, what was that, 2 years ago?
Thereabouts. Two and a half, I think. Yeah.
To now, imagine what we're going to be like in another two and a half years. It's going to be insane. You're not going to know the difference between reality and fake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're already starting to see the impact. A World War II history channel that I've watched a little bit was talking about fake AI-generated World War II photos. Mm. And these are now starting to get mixed into our history and polluting the historical timeline of what happened. Because you'll see these photos and... You can't tell because they're black and white, they're grainy, they're already a bit, you know, messed up, and you just take it for real. I mean, you could generate anything and effectively change history doing that, right?
Yeah, you could take, like, pictures of Stalin, you could just make people disappear from those pictures.
And, and you've got to think, too, that every... So if you're in a war, like a World War II type scenario, each country that's in that is being fed different information. So their timeline of what's actually happening are very different. And to segue into the next article that we've got, defense is actually trialing AI radio comms to do exactly that, to mislead the enemy into thinking that something's happening that actually isn't happening.
Right.
Or to lead them into thinking that something's not happening that is actually happening. So,
defense.
So this will be AI generated radio chatter.
Yeah.
To
They've nicknamed it Trap Radio, which I think is a fitting name.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's all about electronic warfare and misleading the enemy into thinking something's happening that isn't, or the opposite of that. So
it's very interesting seeing how the EW electronic warfare, like space is changing so much. And then I don't know if you saw, there's a couple of interesting videos this week, especially after this Ukraine strike inside Russia. But it was showing how, because drone use is now just rampant, it's like the entire front is just swarms of drones from both sides. And because it's very easy to block the remote signals for the drones, like, you know, it's pretty standard stuff, right? So now these long range drones have fiber optic, like they have unshielded fiber optic spools on them, like a fishing line spool, like up to 25 kilometers worth of fiber optics. And as the drone's flying out, it's coming back to the operator. But now the front line is now just full of all these like fiber optics.
Yep.
And it's like, it's a video of a soldier like walking down the, like, walking across this field, and his legs are just covered in
getting tangled.
It's like a spider web beak. Bloody hell. Yeah, so bizarre.
Yeah. Well, I mean, wire guided missiles have been a thing, right? So it's not that.
I guess it's more now the quantity of.
Right.
You know, there's just swarms of these things flying around now.
Well, they're cheap too. That's the thing. You can buy a cheap drone off Alibaba or wherever, strap half a kilo of C4 to it, and all of a sudden you've got a guided bomb. Why spend thousands of dollars on a guided bomb when you can do it for $500?
Yeah, much cheaper. And what else we got? We've got the Switch 2 coming out.
Switch 2 came out yesterday morning.
Change tack,
So I took my son with me down to, not the midnight launch, because we didn't, like EB Games did like the midnight release thing. But like JB Hi-Fi still like, they opened a little early. So I was like, okay, we'll go down, we'll go before school, we'll go pick it up. I remember like, that kind of stuff being pretty exciting as a kid. So like, all right, we'll go down. There's a couple of people like milling around out the front waiting for it to open, but it wasn't lines around the block.
Yeah. I mean, people have probably done online orders, I'd imagine, as well.
I think if you were really keen, you would have gone to a midnight one. Yeah. So
we were having a look at it because my young fella's Switch, the SD card reader has failed on it. So we were having a look at it because, you know, road trip, you've got to have some sort of distraction in there for a kid, especially a 14-year-old, because, you know, they're painful at the best of times sometimes. he's not really. He's a good kid. But yeah, at $700.
Well, okay. But yes, and I agree with you, right? But the weird thing has been with this most recent console generation is they've gone up in price over time. My Xbox Series X, had it for years, and the Xbox generation, the current one, just I can't get my head straight on what
the rectangular style one, and the Series X is the fridge.
Is the fridge, the fridge, yeah. But so I think I've had that for 3 years now, and to buy the same model now, it's like $200 more. Like, it shouldn't be that. So that's, it's like, well, we're going to get a new Switch. Nintendo never releases any of their first party stuff on any other platform. So fine. And in like 3 years time, it'll be a grand. So
yeah. Well, we were having a look at, cause I was looking at that and I went, I don't really want to do that, cause that's a lot of coin. And I won't ever get to play it. So I said to him, what about a Steam Deck? Have they got Steam Decks there? And he was like, yeah, $650 for a Steam Deck. And I'm like, that's not bad. $650, I could probably, because I will actually get to play that.
And you can play the games on your PC.
That's right. So I get to use that, whereas the Switch, I won't get to touch.
The Steam Deck's really nice.
But we were having a look. I was like, oh, okay, if they're $650 brand new, like, I'll shell out for a brand new one. But I wonder what they're, because, you know, money's not flush at the moment because we spent so much money preparing for this trip. So I was like, oh, well, what about a secondhand one? So he jumps onto CEX or one of those websites. $1,000.
What?
And I'm like, I can buy a brand new one for $650. How is it $1,000 secondhand?
Well, yeah, but it's got my greasy Cheeto fingers on it. Can't put a price on that. Well, $350 apparently. Yeah,
$350 is the price you put on that.
Yeah. Yes. These are artisanal scratches on the screen.
Yeah, so we might just be getting a brand new one.
Yeah. Let us know how you go with that. You've got SteamOS as well. I think that you can download that now and install it on various devices as well, which apparently is pretty good for gaming. So, yeah. But besides that, I'm sitting a cert on the 16th. It's the Pro Security Professional.
So you've just done the network one and now into the security one, yeah? How you feeling?
Yeah, they always go back to back, yeah. If I was to sit it today, I'm woefully underprepared. But I always say I'm woefully underprepared.
And then you pass it. This is Banky's season of certs.
Every 2 years this comes about, yeah.
Every 2 years he's got this season. It's like 3 months and he does every single cert that Google offers.
Do them all back to back, yeah. So the next show I'll be able to report on how that went.
Nice. They should give you a thing of like, once you've passed the thing three times, you get like a little checkbox that says fine. Just send us $300 every 2 years and you can keep your badge.
Well, it's almost like that, yeah. All right, then, let's do it. Let's move on with the community news. Okay, Ian, it's your part of the show. Well, it's become your part of the show. Tell us what's going on with GDG.
Yep. Yeah, so GDG Brisbane, the guys up here in Brizzy, Google I.O. Extended Meetup is happening for Brisbane AI and Mobile. It's happening at QUT Garden Point Campus in George Street in the city. That's on June 7th, so that is tomorrow at 9 a.m. So that's going to be a good one. If you haven't registered, links in the show notes, jump on. Sydney meetup for June has already happened, so we'll skip that one. Oops. June the 4th. Oops.
I hope it was good.
Yeah, I hope it went well. Now, there's another one that's coming up is the Study Jam for Gen AI. It's run by Google Cloud Sydney, but it's also co-hosting with Adelaide, Brisbane, Darwin, Hobart, Melbourne and Perth. So every other GDG in the country.
And how's that going to look, that co-host?
So it's basically they're all running the same thing at the same time. And there may be some joint video that's going on there where Google actually runs the session themselves. But it's all hands-on learning via Skills Boost. It's happening on June the 15th at 10 a.m. And it's an online event. Well, it looks like, yes, it's a virtual program for developers. Oh, there you go.
Okay, so it'll be done virtually, yeah.
Yep, so that'll be a cracker. GDG Melbourne has their June coding night. That is on June the 18th, and that will be at the Metal Group head office by the looks of it. It's level 2, 452 Flinders Street, so that looks like the Metal Group office to me.
That says sold out next to it.
Yeah, it does say sold out. Yeah. So you can actually register for... cancellation tickets. So
I see. Yep.
Give it a wallop. But yeah, that's happening on June the 18th at 5:45 p.m. And then Build Your Own Event Planner AI Agent is happening with GDG Darwin at CDU Art Collection and Midpool Art Gallery in Darwin.
They have the internet in Darwin?
Yeah, they do. Surprisingly, they do. that's on June 12th at 6 p.m.
No, Darwin's great. I've been to Darwin.
Darwin's a lovely place. I love it. Gets a bit warm up there in summer, but, you know.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. Well, that sound like some great events. Make sure you go and check those out. And if you went to that Sydney one on the 4th, chuck us a comment or let us know how it was via our channels. I'll let you know what they are at the end of the show. Awesome. All right, then. Let's get on with the news items. And first news item, which is kind of apt because there's a few things going on with Trump and Google and Musk and everything at the moment. Google moves to reassure EU cloud users amid concern over Trump's threat. Now, the problem here is that a lot of governments and organizations in the EU are reliant on not only Google, but US tech generally, right? And they're worried, the EU's worried that Trump's going to come and use that as some sort of leverage to, invoke extra tariffs or some sort of demand from the US. So the move now is it's broadening these so-called sovereign cloud options, including a new data shield that provides additional cybersecurity protections to European clients. What do we think of this in these days and times?
Look, I love the comment here. Hayat Gallant is Google's president of customer experience. She didn't name Trump directly, but she did say that tensions were creating anxiety in the world and customers were looking for options to manage their business. So she hasn't said that Trump's creating tensions. But
no, they never will.
No, but the implication is 100% there.
Yeah, these globally uncertain times.
Yeah, that's it. That's another way of saying the US president is cray-cray.
Yeah.
But look, I think it's a good thing that they're getting the sovereign cloud stuff. I know that there's a company over in France, I think it is, that runs their own cloud. Actually, I'm pretty sure they were mentioned.
OVH Cloud.
Yeah, that's him.
OVH. Yeah.
So they're huge over there, absolutely massive, and purely because they are sovereign. They're an EU only provider. You can't get them in America, in Australia, in Britain, anywhere else.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, moving aside from the Google piece, yes, you've got OVH Cloud. Hetzner is huge now.
Yeah,
like I had no idea who these guys were. I'm like, apparently they're massive, and everyone loves them because they're cheap.
they were the big ones behind Pirate Bay. Well, the company wasn't, but that's where Pirate Bay was hosted for hosted. Many, many years.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So I mean, there's definitely, I suppose, putting aside the hyperscalers or the global hyperscalers, there is that opportunity for not just in Europe, but in a lot of different countries for their more regional data center players to be like, yep, we're here, we're in this border, we're within your regulations, we'll play ball. Could see that Google and, their peers, wanting to be like, well, now we're having to compete with that a little bit. So we need to have solutions that whereas we can still get a piece of the pie in those countries.
Yeah. We need to have an answer to it. Yeah.
We need to have an answer.
The article actually says for defense, intelligence, and other sensitive sectors, which we all know what that means, Google also said it provided an air-gapped solution, which means client data does not have to be connected to any other network, which sort of is a perfect thing for defense, because I know in Australia, defense secret network, you can't get onto it unless you're on a special. Well, okay, this is old data because I haven't been in defense for 20 odd years, but you can't you can't get onto that unless you're on a special device to connect to a special network. It's just the way it works.
That's right. And as we'll see, Google is providing an air-gapped solution to German Bundeswehr, which is the German military.
Yeah, so this is very interesting. I mean, the whole air-gapped solution, so it's taking the distributed cloud model, which has been great in that if it's like, okay, I want to use Google Cloud, but I need this data in my data center, either for privacy reasons or for latency reasons. I need it here, but I want to be able to manage it in a sort of cloud native way. Distributed cloud gave you that. This takes it a step further. It's like, I want to be able to manage it in a cloud-native way, and I don't want Google anywhere near it after it's deployed.
I want the automation and the ease of use and all the rest of it, but I don't want you touching my stuff.
Yeah.
That's sort of it. And BWI, who is the IT provider for the German Armed Forces, are actually running it, and they've called it P-Cloud BW because that just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, I'm sure it's snappy in German.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you update that? You just go in with your USB stick? And
well,
I don't know.
And that's the thing. They have to manage the whole stack then.
Yeah.
It's your hardware. It's your data center. It's your networks. We're going to provide you the software for you to run, and that's it. Where it's hands off from then on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they probably do get, like, some sort of support bundle. Like, obviously, I don't have a view of what it's like inside of Google and how they patch their environment. But, yeah, they would be having to supply this to their gap solutions.
I would assume that Google would be providing for situations like this where it's air gap defense grade sort of stuff, that they would be providing sort of vetted ISOs or something of the likes that you can run on the machines.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
That are like, you have to log into this specific portal, download the ISO, rip it to a disk, and then you can take it into your data center and put it
in. They run it through their checks. Yep. And,
It's very interesting, though.
Yeah.
I do find it funny in that it's like reading through their reasoning for this, and one of them is that they're big SAP users, right? So their whole, which I find funny, thing of like defense needing an ERP, which of course they do, but it's interesting. And SAP has very specific requirements, and so it needs to run on like kind of Google Cloud services. Like, well, we need those, but we don't want it in the cloud. This gives them that capability. But there was a note in there saying that, you know, they still need to be like cloud first, and this gives them cloud first. Like, yeah, but it's not really cloud. Like, yes,
sort of is. Cloud's just someone else's computer, really.
Yeah, but now it's your computer. It's somebody else's computer, but it's your computer.
Your computer.
Yeah. I guess in your data center.
They could pick up all their infrastructure's code and run it on Google if they wanted.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's right. But yeah, that's rightly pointed out. Yeah, it says in here, a key reason for choosing Google Cloud is that Bundaware utilizes SAP software for logistical and administrative purposes, which... Like, you can run SAP on any cloud. So, interesting why they chose Google, but I'm glad they did.
All right. Yeah. Well, I want to follow this EU sovereignty thing a little bit as Trump carries on with his tantrums, as he does. And let's see where this goes because, you know, it's going to affect everyone. Another quote I wanted to take out of the article there. Sovereignty used to be a niche thing that applied to very regulated industries, but suddenly in the current environment, everybody's thinking about it.
Oh, yeah.
So there's going to be more of an effect, I would say. All right. Well, let's move on. And VMware. That's it. We're done.
Talking about dumpster fires.
Just VMware.
Let's go. Moving on.
Dumpster fires done.
I like we should just have an actual segment in the show. We have that AI Wars segment. We just have the VMware.
Let's move on with the VMware dumpster fire.
So you swapped these around, Ian. What's going on here?
I did. I swapped them around because one actually leads into the other one quite nicely. But essentially, Broadcom is dumping the lowest tier of their reseller program. So
they don't want no small fish.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
they already shed so many people. Like, it was already very difficult if you were a VMware partner to have retained that post Broadcom. You needed to have some significant scale.
Yeah,
and now even those people were getting the big A.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, so
VMware looks to shed its, slim down its partner base yet again.
Yeah, that's right. So this is only affecting America, APAC, and Japan.
Right? And why is that? Why is Europe?
Doesn't affect Europe. Gee, I wonder why. So Broadcom Advantage Partner Program for VMware resellers used to include registered, select, premier, and pinnacle tiers. And it now doesn't include registered anymore. And Broadcom states that this will enable them to focus on deepening our relationships with the partners who are committed to delivering the transformative customer experience around VMware solutions. But whether that's true or not is yet to be seen. I'm confused by Broadcom's tact here because they seem to be trying very hard to alienate every single player in the IT industry.
And we're already seeing
people jump ship to other solutions, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but not enough to make a dent in their profits. Like they are, they're beating expectations. They're thrilled with how their VMware acquisition has gone.
Yeah, right. because they put the price up
1,000%.
Yes,
correct. I mean, and they don't care.
Huge jump in profit.
They don't care if your 3-node cluster that's running your business switches to a different product. They do not care because we have 1,000 nodes, sitting in a Fortune 10 company, and they're paying the premium, and that's more than covering
and
it.
And they will pay the ATO, who have just spent another $90 million for the year. Licensing.
Yeah. So it's just, I mean, they don't have to think about VMware from a 10-year horizon, right? They're just, it's quarters on quarters on quarters. We've acquired the product. We need to grow our profit, over the profit horizon. And that's all that they are worried about. And if it stops achieving that down the road, they'll ditch it.
Surely the likes of Nutanix have got a massive play here. They've got to be able to come in and go, hey, look, we can provide you the same hyperconverged infrastructure that VMware can, but at half the price or three quarters of the price.
Yeah, they give them some sort of cross grade price. Yeah,
yeah, we'll buy your VMware licenses off you or give you a discount on your licensing so you come over to Nutanix and move on with life.
I think there's definitely been a big shift into that space, but those projects do take time, especially if you're deep into the VMware ecosystem. Nutanix has become friendlier now because so VMware, you had the flexibility of, yes, you had vSAN, you could go hyperconverged, but a lot of people found that they didn't really want to be all their eggs in one basket because shifting from one HCI environment to another is a bit more complex than if you've got a 3-tier infrastructure, very easy to spin up new nodes and connect to the same storage. And then when you need to do storage, you connect the new storage and you move across. You could walk your way around. So Nutanix was only a HCI play. But now, as of like a month ago, has now signed on a bunch of options to allow external storage. So
cool.
You know, yes, that it is maturing. So we'll see over time.
Yeah, it's an interesting play that Broadcom have made. I'm not sure how it's going to work out for the better for them. Like, I understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to reduce their cost of support to partners and all that and only really keep the good partners. But still, there's the barrier to entry then becomes a lot higher. In order to, like, let's say, for instance, we started up a consultancy that specialized in VMware. And, I mean, it's not...
You couldn't be a partner.
You couldn't be a partner. Yeah, the barrier to entry there is you need to get certifications, and you can't get certifications as a company without being a partner, and you can't become a partner without having certifications. So it's like, well...
Yeah. They
the
won't
chicken
give
or the
tiers
egg,
which
one comes first?
Yeah. So, no, you need to then run downstream of a CISP, and then, it's a long process to move your way up.
Yeah, that's right. So I think what they're doing might actually hurt them in the long run, in that they will lose partners because, you know, new businesses won't be able to get in. They won't gain more ground. They'll stay static.
That'll take some while to soak in, though.
It'll
look good in next quarter and the quarter after that
It might look good for the next 5 years, but maybe in 6 years' time it might start looking pretty bad.
As those individuals start to cycle out of the system and, they don't bring on any new smaller fish, people can't get certified, But not in Europe,
No. The major channel changes come as the European trade organisations are seeking to punish Broadcom because they're saying that the current VMware licensing relies on practices that breach the European competition regulations.
There we go.
Which leads us into our next article from Ars Technica, all about the calls of cloud service providers to have Broadcom sued, essentially. So they're calling Broadcom's business model legally and ethically flawed.
That's right. It's a group from the ECCO, which has described themselves as independent monitoring body, composed of members of Cloud Infrastructure Services in Europe Trade Association. The report that they produced said that VMware customers who have moved to subscriptions are enduring substantial financial burdens and operational disadvantages and push for regulatory action.
Yeah, so the ECCO, which is the European Cloud Competition Observatory, says that its goal is to highlight ongoing or new unfair software licensing practices from any software vendor in the cloud sector, which is good. Like in,
specifically cloud, yeah.
I mean, Broadcom, the report that they've put out says that Broadcom's highly litigious approach to partners and customers, pointing to a cease and desist letters that they sent out. We covered that in the last episode of the podcast where they just proactively sent out letters to customers because they let their support lapse. And and they also cited in the report the litigation, which has now been settled with Siemens over the claim that Siemens has pirated thousands, in quotes, thousands of copies of VMware software. I'm like, that seems a little unlikely.
A little aggressive, you know. I believe we call that speculative invoicing.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Well, we'll see how that goes. I mean, this body doesn't sound like it has a lot of teeth. I mean, we do like to see, like, EU is generally pretty good with getting on top of this competition stuff, but this particular body doesn't seem like it has a lot of clout behind it.
At least there's some pushback though, right? I mean,
well, I suppose if they take their report to the European Commission of Fair Trading, whatever they're called these days, I can't remember, then it might get some teeth, and it might get some teeth pretty quick. So if they can prove that VMware has taken a retaliatory type of business model, then the EU is going to stomp on Broadcom pretty hard.
Sure.
We've seen it happen before.
Yeah, I suppose for those of us. Me words speak good, yeah?
Yeah.
So those of us not in the EU, knowing Broadcom, even if they do get whacked and they have to, you know, like this most recent change, like, okay, well, we won't implement that in Europe, they'll just do it hit to us anyway. Yeah. Like, we'll cop it in Australia, they'll cop it in the US.
Yeah, well, I mean, we don't have any teeth at all. We're a fairly small fish in a very big ocean.
Good times.
Yeah.
But on the bright side, VMware Engine in Google Cloud has finally hit version 8.
Yes.
Because if you are going to run VMware and you don't want to talk to VMware,
this is the way to go.
This is the way.
So Google has a long history of being able to implement VMware right from, what was it, 3 years ago that VMware Engine first came out, I think it was?
Yeah, thereabouts, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it was 2020, so it's 5 years ago. There you go. So VMware Engine has hit vSphere version 8 update 3, and it's also pushed NSXT to version 4.2.1.2, which brings about some good improvements.
And so it's actually good because it is bringing it all the way up to pretty much the latest version of 8. I know 9 is coming soon, but you know, it'll be a while before we can see that through these environments. But we're not back on, okay, we're on 8 update 1 or something.
And the VE3 nodes are coming out soon too, I hear.
Oh.
Yes. So the VE1 nodes are the old, the first generation nodes that we had, the Dell PowerEdge machines. And then the VE2 nodes, which are the current generation, Dell infrastructure, as far as I'm aware, they get a lot bigger though. So instead of just the standard 72 CPUs and 768 gig of RAM and 15 terabytes, I think it was, of NVMe storage, the VE2 Mega 128, yep, is now 128 CPUs and 2 terabytes of RAM and 50 terabytes of NVMe off the top of my head.
Yeah, so I think we went up. There must be like 2U boxes, these ones, because I remember the original ones were Dell 670.
Yeah, 670s, yeah. Whatever they were. But the new ones are huge, and they've actually got storage, proper storage only nodes too now. So you can have a VE2 Mega 128 SO, which is a storage only node, and it's a lot cheaper, but it doesn't give you the ability to utilize the computer memory on that box. It's only there for storage.
It's great that storage only nodes now, like it was sitting in the back end for a little while, but you had to do some kind of jiggery pokery to make sure that VMs didn't end up on those boxes, to now actually have it as a supported cluster node type. It's great.
Yeah. Well, we all remember the processes that we had to go through to get storage only nodes in the various clusters that we've deployed. But yeah, so VE2 nodes are the current generation. The VE3 nodes will get the eSIM storage improvements on them. So the VE3 nodes that are coming out are Google specific. So they're Google hardware, not Dell. They will be dual NICed, dual power, huge machines. Very similar to what Google runs in their data center currently. And they'll get the eSIM improvements in storage. So I think you get an extra 25% of storage out of your cluster, out of your storage infrastructure. Can't remember what the actual numbers are now.
Either way, it's great. So it's coming along a lot.
It's good stuff, yeah. All right. Well, can't wait to get my hands on that.
The only bugbear I've got is that they specify that NSXT is version 4.2.1.2. Yeah. But in version 4, it's no longer NSXT. It's just NSX. Just
NSX, yeah.
So no NSXV, no NSXT. No,
they've dropped it.
Just NSX.
Right. Just a bit of rebranding.
Yeah.
All right. Well, another story we're following is the Google antitrust story that's been happening. Google said it will appeal an antitrust decision under which federal judge proposed less aggressive ways to restore online search competition than the 10-year regime suggested by antitrust enforcers. This is an article on IT News. And the Dodge and a coalition of states want Google to share search data and cease multi-billion-dollar payments to Apple and other smartphone makers to the default search engine on new devices.
Yeah, hasn't this been dragging out?
It has been dragging on.
Yeah. I mean, in April, a US federal judge said that Google illegally dominated two markets for online advertising technology, with the US Department of Justice saying that Google should sell off at least Google Ad Manager, which seems like a crazy thing to sell off.
It's like sell off
a tiny bit of the big pie that all works together and can't operate without each other.
Yeah, that's it.
One of the Department of Justice people saying, oh, Google has to sell off Chrome. Like, yeah, but Chrome doesn't work unless Google runs it, because it's all Google backed. So, like,
no, you should just do that for free.
Yeah. You can sell off Chrome, but it ain't going
to
work.
And that'd be the end of Chromium, because they contribute most of the code to that.
That's right.
Which will be like, then most of the code to the other browsers will go as well, because they all use the same code base.
Yeah. Well,
so you're not achieving anything.
That's right, because Edge is Chromium based. Chrome is Chromium based, obviously. There's a whole heap of browsers out there that are Chromium based that benefit from that really fast rendering engine that Google developed.
Google's input on it, yeah. The article goes on to say Google has addressed any concerns about competition in AI by no longer entering exclusive agreements with wireless carriers and smartphone makers, including Samsung Electrics, leaving them free to load rival search engine and AI apps on new devices. So that statement there struck me as odd, because you're seeing the Samsung ads now, right? Mm. Looks a lot like Gemini to me.
But
so that deal's already been struck, right? Yeah. That's in the past. So I guess what that's what that is.
Deals.
Any new deals, yeah. I don't know if they'd be interested, to be honestly. I don't know how much that's going to affect them. I don't know how long the Samsung deal's in place for, but
no, but
who else is going to make a deal with them?
But like, I've seen Apple AI and it's it's a little bit like another article we'll cover later on. It's a little bit Apple like Builder AI. I'm pretty sure it is Builder AI under the hood. I've seen a whole heap of them out there, and they're nothing compared to
nothing. What,
like, you have a look at the top three AIs in the world, and Apple's AI doesn't come close to any of them. Actually, that'd be an interesting thing.
They've got a lot of internal problems with AI and trying to get it out the door. YouTube video I watched a little while ago now, they went into all of this, and they were so late to the party.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to catch up now.
I wonder if if Apple's AI even registers on LiveBench.
I bet it doesn't.
I can't see it. Let me have a look at, can I search for Apple? No, nothing. Nope. No, Apple's LiveBench doesn't matter.
That's all right. You can get the Google app on Apple, can't you?
Yeah. Well, Gemini, and I think also OpenAI's stack, like they are working with Apple to integrate into Apple AI. Right. So I think they might want to use theirs as sort of a wrapper, and then they'll back end everything off to the more capable models.
Just
API call it. Yeah, okay. Yep. Could always install that DeepSeek if you want all your privacy exposed.
Yeah, I don't know if privacy-focused Apple would be interested in that.
All right. Well, yeah, so a bit of an antitrust update. Not much there, but we'll keep you updated. And, of course, you're going to power all that AI. You need to get an unlimited source. Article here on Yahoo Finance, Google announces massive partnership that could unleash limitless underground energy source.
Deep substrate foliated calcite.
Time to get boots on the ground. We're talking about a partnership here. We'll utilize Google Cloud's computing service, Project Innerspace Geomap, which helps to map potential geothermal hotspots.
Yeah, right. So we're going to use the earth to warm up water to spin a turbine.
Yeah.
It's all warming up water.
Except for solar power. Doesn't warm any water. Terrible. Yeah,
it's terrible. This sun thing, I mean, really, it could do a better job of being a fireball, couldn't it?
At sun, boil more water.
Yeah. Preferably not all of it, though.
Oh, no.
So the current estimate is that the thermal load could power our needs 140 times over, second only to solar energy.
Now,
in terms of potential supply.
Now, I want to know how they're going to do this. So, are they going to do another Russia trick and see if they can drill right into the core of the
super deep borehole
through the mantle?
Super deep borehole. What was that one called? We were looking at it the other day, Dave.
I think someone told me, but I hadn't looked it up myself yet, that they've managed to drill deeper than that recently.
Really? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because that one was
go with Google
Ks.
It live. Give me a sec.
Was it 12 Ks or was it like 12,000 feet? I can't remember. But it was a long way down. And the borehole, the biggest problem with it is that the drill head started melting when they got down there because it was like 700 degrees.
Too hot.
Yeah. Yep.
And the mantle's only 3,000 kilometers thick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you're
like less than 1% of the way through. You're less than 0.5%.
But there are areas on the surface of the Earth where it comes closer, right? And that is being done in like northern Europe and northern continents.
Like Finland and stuff like that. Yeah, they use a lot of geothermal.
Yeah,
absolutely. There must be other places where it can be harnessed as well. It has to be.
I suppose all those places probably have thriving hot springs businesses.
Well, I know there's a few places in Australia that got thriving hot springs.
Yeah,
they do.
But so you've got to dig a long way down in order to get heat enough heat there to boil water.
Yeah,
like it's not it's not 12 kilometers, but it is kilometers deep in order to get to the point where the Earth's crust is hot enough to be able to boil the water that you're sending through a pipe. Then you've got to get the water down there and back up.
That requires
a lot of power.
Yeah, and there's a lot of upfront costs as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's seconded only to nuclear, really. It's got to spend, put a lot of infrastructure and a lot of digging and pipe work and all the rest of it to actually get that heat out.
Yeah. Well, because I was thinking about the Kola super deep bore, which is the one in Russia that goes like 12.5 Ks deep, or 12.2 Ks deep. That one took them 30 years to dig, to drill. It was a long, long time.
And it was like 100 mil size hole.
Yeah, yeah. It's not big. It's not a big hole.
It's not big.
But it took them a long, long time to drill that.
Yeah.
So
what you're saying, you don't like the chances of this project getting off the ground.
Well, I don't like the chances of Google seeing a return on this for some time. Like they might put time into it for a dozen years and then go, yep, we've got it to a point now where it's actually generating power for us and we can do this over and over and over again, and we've got, you know, we've got this massive amount of land that we've drilled boreholes all over and we're just pulling heat out of the crust, but it's going to take a long, long time to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose if you think of it more as just an R&D project, it's like, well, it's hard to do. Maybe we can work out a way to kind of disrupt this and then make it more feasible.
I'd love to see it happen.
Yeah, yeah. And the project's just to map potential sites, right? So, yeah, you never know what's going
to
come out.
I really would love to see it happen, because I know in the UK they use a lot of geothermal to heat houses. It's one of the most common ways of heating houses is...
And that's the most efficient, right? Because it's direct.
Yeah.
It's just there.
And it keeps the house at a constant temperature, because the earth is always, when you dig down like 3 meters into the ground, the earth is always at a constant temperature. It fluctuates by less than a degree throughout the year. So you'll keep the inside of your house at a perfect temperature all year round.
Yeah.
I'd love to see it happen, though. It'd be far less unsightly than a whole heap of solar panels.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I like it.
Solar panels aren't that much of a problem up in your house.
Yeah. No, as long as they're
while you're in your house, though, you'd be checking your Gmail.
Yep.
Upgrade your account while you're at it.
Yeah, so I threw this one in this morning, and sorry for the late notice, lads. I was reading it this morning at about 5:30 and then went, oh, we should probably cover that. So Google has warned that more than 60% of US users saw an increase in scams over the past year, with more than half personally experiencing a data breach, right? Mm. Which, I mean, this is not surprising news for us. So what Google is saying here is that a lot of users are still relying on older sign-in methods, which is passwords and two-factor authentication, which, believe it or not, two-factor authentication is old school now. And it's reasonably easy to bypass. So what they're advising is that we should move to passkeys. That's the synopsis of the article. Move to passkeys quicker than you can, as fast as you can, I should say.
Well, I don't think that's anything new to that particular, you know, warning. Move to passkeys. Two-factor via SMS, we know, has problems. Use Google Authenticator app, and you should be a lot more secure.
Yep. But passkeys are a far better solution than passwords and two-factor. Actually, Microsoft, there's a little note right at the bottom of this article, says Microsoft has gone further than Google and is pushing for users to delete passwords altogether, given they present an account vulnerability if still in place. Well, you can't do that with your Google account yet. You can avoid using your password and change your two-factor to remove SMS and only use options linked to your devices.
Yeah, like push or authenticator apps.
Yeah, so I use Bitwarden. I know, Dave, you use like 1Password or one of those ones.
Yep.
every time I log into an account that's got a passkey, it automatically pops up and says, do you want to use this passkey? And I just click it and it does it. I don't need to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, they're nice because you can keep the same passkey and use in multiple locations. And
yeah.
And that's a way to also, if you had a requirement to use a passkey for like a shared account, you know, if system accounts, things like that. And
Very good. All right. Well, no security items for today other than that little bit, but we've got plenty of AI news. Let's get on with the AI Wars. AI article for this week, announcing Anthropic Claude Opus 4 and Claude Sonnet 4 on Vertex AI. We've got some new models in the model garden. How do these ones stack up?
Well, Claude, oh, actually, I should reopen that page, eh, and have another look. So Livebench, Claude 4 is actually second on the list. So Claude 4 Opus Thinking by Anthropic is global average of 72.93. It's just below O3 high, which is OpenAI's O3 model, which is 74.42. There you go.
Claude Opus 4 is Anthropic's most powerful model to date.
Yeah.
Claude Opus 4 excels at coding.
And according to Livebench, it is. So Claude 4 Opus and Claude 4 Sonnet are the second and third on the list behind OpenAI.
Yeah, wow.
And Google's Gemini 2.5 Pro Preview is fourth. So there you go.
They're right up there. Yeah. Claude 4 Sonnet is Anthropic's mid-size model that balances performance with cost and surpasses Sonnet 3.7, its predecessor. Very nice. Mm. What can you do with these things? The blog goes on to talk about Vertex AI, which we kind of know about already.
Yeah.
But, they're available to use straight out of Vertex AI, which is nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I mean, there was a little side thing to this, but knowing how much Google's cooking under the hood, right? You see that they accidentally, for about 20 minutes, leaked a new model. It's Kingfall model, which appeared.
I didn't hear this.
Apparently, it was thinking differently. Apparently, a very, very impressive model. There's something cooking.
Yeah, wow. Okay. We'll have to keep an eye on that one. And speaking of unusual AIs, Builder AI coded itself into a corner. Now, what's so unusual about Builder AI?
Well, it's not really AI. It's really just humans.
It was just actually a team of Indians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the I suppose the most unusual thing about this is that this company has been running for years and has managed to fleece Microsoft and a whole heap of other investors of somewhere in the vicinity of the $250 million, which just baffles my mind that they were able to do that and show off this wonderful AI that really was just a whole heap of dudes sitting in a room in India coding.
And giving replies.
Yeah. Jeez, man. Your fingers.
But this article does go into another point, though. It talks about, and I've highlighted a comment here, one commenter said, the amount of time they spend relying or replying to a friggin' LLM is just crazy. It's also depressing. Yeah. So I've had this experience. You're trying to get the LLM to do something and it just bloody won't do it. And you have to just explain a prompt. So I could have written the code myself by now. Like this is where we're at.
This is where the new courses come into their own because it's all about you're not learning. The AI is not learning how to respond to you. You're learning how to talk to the AI.
The AI, yep.
And so the AI technically is training you. You're not training it because you're the one being trained how to talk to it.
Right, because we're the dumb meat sacks.
That sounds like a Terminator reference.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it is.
My way, flashback. God, you know what's funny though is that while we're on there, because I've got this article up in front of us, and you know the ad that is next. I don't know what you've got, but I've got. You might have your ads blocked, but the ads I'm getting on the register for this article is VMware costs sky high. Land a better deal with Nutanix.
Yeah, it's listening to you.
Yeah, exactly.
But they do make a good point in this article as well. It's a Mechanical Turk. You guys know what the Mechanical Turk was, right? Yep. The thing that could win the chess games. This is what Builder AI were doing.
Yeah, yeah. So
essentially.
Mechanical Turk. And I've got that same little box there. It says we're supposedly an automation capable of playing chess at a high level. Consisted of a wizard-like figure sitting at a wooden cabinet before a chessboard. The so-called automation debuted in the 18th century and wowed many of its apparent prowess at the game. However, it's later revealed that it was not AI at all. It was a human.
It was a human in a box underneath.
So Builder AI has just taken this concept and run with it as a business model.
Yeah. I mean, so did Amazon with their, you know, just walk in, walk out grocery stores, and it just turned out to be, you know, a whole team of people just watching cameras and saying, he's picked up the Master Foods spicy red. Okay, add it to his cart. All right.
Peel that one.
Yeah.
Why not just have the staff at the tills, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's not revolutionary.
But I tell you what, going to the Reddit thread, a music thread on Reddit titled "My New Hobby: Watching AI Slowly Drive Microsoft Employees Insane." Yep. And there's some links to some PRs in there, and the comments comments for the ages.
It was hilarious because this article actually cites is last month Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella has boasted that 30% of the code in some of the tech giants' repositories was written by AI. So if the AI is driving developers crazy, you can imagine how many developers are going nuts at Microsoft dealing with AI-generated code.
This is a serious question just for a minute. How long is this sustainable for? It's not, right? It's mad cow disease. You can't feed cows to cows, right? The whole system will just collapse eventually.
I think the biggest issue that we're going to see...
AI's getting cryon illness.
I think the biggest issue that we're going to see with AI-generated code is a lot of the code that... the AI models are trained on, not just code, but a lot of the information that AI models are trained on is publicly available stuff. So that you've got to think
that people have created up to now.
And so you've got to have a look at like the likes of Stack Overflow. The vast majority of the code examples that I see in Stack Overflow, I wouldn't implement if you paid me. They're great for examples. But they're not production.
It's a starting point. It's a starting point. If you don't understand a concept or know what to do, it's a starting point for something. That's the way I've used it. Yeah.
It sounds like Stack Overflow's been in the toilet, unfortunately, now.
Oh, yeah.
The traffic flow to that site since these models have come out, it's really dropped off a cliff.
But where's the fresh input? There needs to still continue fresh input to the system, right? And the new ideas need to go in there, and it needs to be refreshed.
This is where I'm going.
The same crud.
So this is where I'm going with this is we've trained the model on some potentially questionable information to start with, and we're going to get to a point where the model's training itself on the same basis that it started with.
That's right.
So the code that it's going to give, theoretically, is going to get progressively worse.
Yeah, they do give this. There is a name for this. The name escapes me right now, but AI boffins do have a name for this.
Yeah, hallucination.
Like model collapse or something.
Yeah,
model collapse. Maybe I'll ask Gemini.
Ask the model what its nemesis is. But yeah, so I can see a point where we're not coding anymore as humans, and so the AI is doing all of that, and it's training itself, and it's putting in the same security flaws that we're seeing on the internet in code examples, and therefore we're going to end up with a whole heap of really insecure code.
Well, I'm sure some pretty smart people are working on how we deal with that after the fact, right?
I hope so. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. It's called collapse. It's called AI collapse.
There you go.
Yeah, all right. Well, let's just see how that pans out. I think it's scary, but it's exciting at the same time.
It is, yeah.
But a good AI. I thought this was a good AI. Just to finish off the show, this is a good AI story. La Trobe AC AMI supercomputer comes online. Now, this is a bit of a behemoth. Built with NVIDIA DGX H200 systems. The supercomputer is hosted at Next in Melbourne's northern suburbs and has been switched on about nine months after it was promised. But what I thought was good is that the AI will be used to develop immunotherapies, cancer vaccines, med tech, and healthcare. Now, this is an area where AI will absolutely just boom.
Yeah.
There's just some phenomenal things you can do with it in this space.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the biggest problem with this with getting this supercomputer online was just supply of the H200 chips. I think that's where that 9 month delay came from. But yeah, no, I 100% agree. I think AI has really got a good standing here in being able to understand medical data and then analyzing it quite deeply quickly.
Mm. Yeah, because there's so much of it, right? We've amassed so much data. And I think we've really only scratched the surface of what can be fed into it. I mean, look at the whole protein folding thing, right? I mean, that got a boom just from the Citizen Science project of folding it. Like, you give that to an AI and have it doing it at, you know, exponential rates. Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it said the article actually says here one of the first projects to benefit from AI processing performance of the system is a collaboration between Akamai and the Florey Institute of Neuroscience and Mental Health, researching the Niemann-Pick disease type C, a progressive neurodegenerative disorder in children, which I think is fantastic. But the amount of like raw data that comes out of these sort of studies, like you've got to think of the amount of data that's in DNA alone is unfathomable to a human. That a tiny little cell can store gigabytes of data.
But here we are. I mean, in the 90s, you know, that in the 90s, it was like it, when they were, you know, decoding the DNA, it was a lot of data. Mm. But here we are. It's like we can store that now. We can manage it. We can deal with that amount of data now. But
if you walked up to the average human on the street and said, hey, did you know that the DNA inside your body is gigabytes of data? A DNA strand is gigabytes of data, and they would be like, no way, not a hope.
No, it is.
But it is, and this would be talking in petabytes of data.
Yeah, yeah, we've got the computing power now to deal with it.
And the H200 chips are well and truly placed to just crunch all of that data and not worry about bias in it or anything like that. It's just they're looking at pure numbers.
Pure numbers, yep. I think this is fantastic, and it's really going to push some of this area forward. Think of the amount of data that we've got on cancer research, and you know, all the blood samples we've got, and all of that can be used and fed in there. And boy, that's really quite exciting.
I'd love to see a day where cancer has gone the way of polio.
Mm.
You get vaccinated against it, and you'll never get it in your life.
Yep. Oh, we've managed to do that for some cancers.
Yep.
You know, more just around the corner with this technology is made out. So I really like that story, and it was a great one to end on. Well, I don't know about you guys, but boy, we packed a lot in on this show.
We did.
Didn't we? What?
Our opinions have been said on everything.
Everything.
Look, if you're listening to the show, you're probably listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube Music. You can go to any of those platforms and find us. Go to Apple Podcasts, write us a review to really help the show out, and go to YouTube, start the discussions there. Smash that like button while you're there. You might even like to hit subscribe. I don't know how these things work. And you can contact the show, contact@gcpbytes.com.au, and you can find us on the web, www.gcpbytes.com. hivetech.com.au. And of course, today's sponsors are Hivetech Solutions and Mantle Group. Well, I've had a blast today. What about you guys?
Yeah, it's time to go and read some Reddit threads.
And see more of the fallout of certain global uncertainty.
Go and find out what Musk is up to. Boy, oh boy. There we go. We had to mention him at least once on the show. All right. That's about it from us. We'll catch you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye. Hey, sorry, can I just completely interrupt for a second because I just happened to check my phone. Musk has exploded. And now Trump's pulling, like, trying to cancel contracts, and now Musk has just come back saying he's going to scrap Dragon.
Yeah, I knew there was something boiling. I saw it earlier this morning.
I only just saw the Dragon thing now.
So he's scrapping EV. So there's an EV discount that the US government is giving to Tesla. So Trump's scrapping that, and it looks like he's going to scrap the contracts with SpaceX as well.
Fuck me! Oh my goodness!
Yeah. The dumpster fire has some fuel added to it.
I thought Musk was like sort of just going to disappear and vanish into the background.
They had an argument the other day because I don't know what the argument was about, but yeah, it sounds as good as anything.
I mean, because everyone, like, he can't maintain relation, like, Trump can't maintain relationship. It's been amazing to see how long it's taken, but now it's run its course. Oh my goodness. Anyway, whew.
Dave over here is trolling the news while we're trying to record a podcast.
You've just given me some good outtake material anyway. Yeah. So.